Coach, it sounds like everyone's, as it should be, mind is in a good spot. You mentioned confidence. Everybody's confidence in a good spot. How do you, as a coach and your coaching staff, translate that confidence to, like, good, I'm glad everybody's still feeling great, but there's still a few aspects of this game that we got to get better in? How do you convey that message while still encouraging everybody to keep that confidence that they entered last week's game with?
Yeah, it's showing, it's telling the truth. I mean, you got to tell guys the truth. It's, yes, we love you. Yes, we're happy that you're, you know, not taking this too hard, but also let's give you the hard facts and the hard truth of, you know, it's the positive moments and it's the highlights and the lowlights, right? Oftentimes where kids are at today, they just want to see the highlights, right? Everything's an Instagram reel. Everything's in 5 to 10 seconds. They just want to see the positive, and they just keep scrolling through positive all day, right? It's our job as coaches to give them the things that, you know, lost us the game, the detail in our preparation on making sure we don't let things slide, right? I had to do a better job of challenging our coaches to tell these kids the truth, don't worry about the political aspect. Get out of character and let them know that was not okay. Like, you might have to make somebody uncomfortable and tell them the truth. And, you know, and if the person doesn't like it, right, then obviously this might not be the team for them. And so I was proud of when our guys heard the truth from their coaches, they took the message and didn't crumble or, you know, curl up in a ball. They, you know, all the off-season training we did to build our toughness, our mental makeup, they took it on the chin and they said, Coach, I'll get better and I'll do my part. I'll do my 111th to help the team be better.
Love it. Love it. Coach, did you guys come out of that game physically, like, kind of unscathed? It didn't seem like there's a whole lot of injuries going into this game on Saturday, huh?
No, we came out good. You know, I thought from the the standpoint of playing a team like that, the physicality and the violence that they played with and they demonstrated on every play, our guys, you know, got hit, got back up. And I'm really proud of where our team's at right now of, you know, taking hits and getting back up and being ready to play this week.
Yeah. All right, Coach.
I gotta ask him before he gets out of here. Because, look, Coach, he got a positive mindset just like myself. But I know when I would lose, I just the week leading up to the next game or today, it would be different in what I would listen to. Would be different. You change the playlist a little bit. Like, is the playlist on the way to work a little different this week, man, to kind of get your mind right? Or is it about the same, everything the same for you?
I'm from the City of Champions. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where we're born winners, you know what I'm saying? So if we lose, there is no playlist. Ain't been no music. Ain't been no.
See what I'm saying? Yeah. Ain't nothing fun.
Driving into the office.
Ain't been great, baby. Ain't no sun. Ain't no vista. Ain't no view right now. We grind.
That's a solid reference right there, Coach. Ain't no vista. Ain't no view. Bonus points for anybody that gets that.
Yeah, man.
That's a solid reference right there, Coach. Well, you got a tough team in Nevada coming up once again on the road. Before we welcome you home next week, man. So we're locked in. We're behind you, as we always are, and we're excited to see how this group responds this week.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys. Thank you for your support.
Always, appreciate big dog. Stingers up, always. Baby. We still rocking. We here.
That's right. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir. That's our man, Coach Marion, right there, as he gets ready to take on Nevada, coming up this Saturday.
And, hey. I don't love that they lost, but I love
you know what I love you though. Learn. You know what I love what he said. Feel it now. Feel it now. Like, hell, hey, yeah. That's and you know what you talk about. He talked about that first half to the second half. Mm-hmm. Man, I'm a big believer in momentum. Mm-hmm. You set out there to do something in that second half of that football game, and you were able to do it.
Right.
You can go into this game against Nevada and the games and after that and after that and after that with a whole different mindset. Yo, we said we were not going to do something, mm-hmm. and we didn't do it.
Yeah.
Now, that's on the defensive end. Now you got to get this offense going a little bit, and you'll be in great shape.
I tweeted it out. There's a lot of high-character players in that locker room. There's a lot of high-character coaches in that locker room. They're not going to let a loss to anybody in any situation deter them from what they're trying to do. I'd sex that it'll be perfectly fine.
You talk about Coach Marion being a positive. There might not be a more positive human being on the planet than Lem Adams.
Right.
Lem will greet you at 3:30 in the morning as he's about to make your ass vomit on his custom blue turf.
Yeah.
Like, hey, let's go, bro. What to do, baby? Yeah. Let's go. And then he's moments away from destroying your will to live.
Yeah.
And then when it's over,
let's get back to work.
He's gonna lift you up. He's gonna be like, hey, that's what we do.
So it's all good. I can't wait for Saturday. I can't wait for two Saturdays from now when they're finally home.
Finally, yeah.
At Hornet Stadium, man, that's gonna be a great time.
It's gonna be an incredible atmosphere, man. Get your cowboy hats ready.
Yes, sir.
The Coach Brennan Marion Show has been brought to you by J Resort, the newest casino and resort in Reno. J Resort has special discounts available for Sacramento State football fans. Just go to jresortreno.com and use promo code SAC0906.
Hated that first half of football for that team, but excited to see how they respond, because obviously they responded great in the second half. Excited to see how they respond next week.
No, I can't wait.
Next week, a couple days. Yeah.
That was fire, though. Two culture shows today, man. That was crazy.
That was crazy. Yeah, that second interview was a lot better than the first one.
First one was hella funny, though.
So I was like, it kind of got to the point where we're getting like, I don't know like what to do. So it's like, I want to make sure the bases are covered.
Yeah.
It, like if coach got to talk to his coaches, he's got to talk to his coach. Like mm-hmm. that's what he's got to do. But we have obligations that mm-hmm. we have to fulfill, and we're going to do that.
Yeah.
There is no one better than Jerry Jones.
That's good. Wait, go back to back here. Go, D'Lo and Casey, your official Jerry Jones station. Go ahead, somebody.
No, hold on.
But I love Jerry Jones.
There is no one better than Jerry Jones.
DJ,
I'm
going to
keep that one on this side.
Oh, that's cold. That's tough.
DJ Jesse Tapia, man. Oh, you on the ones and twos. Stanley must love us now.
Better hope I don't find that cart. It's going to seriously disappear.
Brother, we got unlimited storage space here.
That's a good point.
Stanley hasn't called in since the trade.
Stanley hasn't.
Stanley ain't called in since Tuesday.
Oh, man.
Oh, no. I just put it together.
Oh, I'd be crushed if we lost Stanley.
That's my boy.
You said something a second ago, Patriots.
Oh, yeah.
11 Super Bowl appearances.
Mm-hmm.
The Kansas City Chiefs have been to 6 of the last 7 Super Bowls.
Man. Wow.
I counted that an embarrassing number of times last night. It's like, I got to be reading this wrong. I think, no, I remember this game. I remember this. It's like, oh, there's... 6 of the, like, they were going for the three-peat last year. They've been to 6 of the last 7 Super Bowls.
Well, look, we could push that out further to, like, when they were good. They've been to 6 of the last 8. They've been to 8 straight conference championship games.
Oh,
correct?
Man.
Yeah, they lost to the Bengals in the conference championship game. Mm.
You think there's a mental aspect to the Ravens and Bills coming up short against this team every year?
So,
we're like, oh,
that's the question.
Chiefs are here and it's kind of not quivering because these are NFL players, but just more so, here we go.
That's the question about your Super Bowl pick. Can whoever your AFC team is get past Patrick Mahomes? Can Josh Allen finally? Do you think Josh Allen can get past Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs? Do you think Lamar Jackson can get past Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs? Do you think Joe Burrow can take that ascension and again get past Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs? And that, like, whoever you're picking to win the Super Bowl, there's probably a factor of Patrick Mahomes, or to get to the Super Bowl, I should say, there's probably a factor of Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs in it. Unless, of course, you're just picking the Kansas City Chiefs to go to the Super Bowl again, which if you did, I wouldn't blame you. We'll give you our Super Bowl picks. We'll make Matt George give us his when he joins us next here. And we will talk basketball. We will talk Kings basketball, including the news of Cam Thomas signing that qualifying offer, what Matt thinks that might mean for the other restricted free agents in the NBA. That's on the way here. It's Steelin' with KC. Brought to you by Sky River Casino and Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. Our man Matt George, host of the Locked On Kings podcast, reporter over at ABC 10, joining us here. Obviously, we're going to talk Kings basketball, but that's a sports fan.
Yeah, man. NFL kicking off. I thought this was a great
kicking off a little over an hour from now, by the way, on ESPN 1320. The Cowboys and the Eagles coming up at 4:45.
Yes, sir. I wanted to bring this to both of you guys because I thought it was a good question or a good statement that Jesse made. Jesse said he told Kyle and James, if Lamar Jackson won that Super Bowl this year, we're talking about a top 15 quarterback to ever play the game. And I just went through this one list, like a CBS list, just to get point of reference. I think you could say top 10 if Lamar Jackson were to get a Super Bowl this year, because that's the one thing he's missing. He's a two-time MVP or three-time?
Lamar?
Yeah.
Two. Last year would have been his third.
Two-time. Two-time MVP. Rushed for 1,000 yards, I think, twice in his career. Got the passing number. He's got everything. It's just the Super Bowl. If he were to win, I think we're looking at a top 10 quarterback to ever play at that moment.
Is the standard bearer for like the best mobile quarterback of all time, Mike Vick? Is that fair to say?
It is, but I think Lamar might be it.
That's what I'm wondering. Is Lamar there? And is Josh Allen in that conversation?
Lamar is going to break Mike Vick's record. Josh Allen is very good. I don't think he's as good as Lamar. I don't think anyone is as good as Lamar. But yes, Josh Allen is. Lamar Jackson is like a skilled runner. Josh Allen is a skilled runner for a quarterback. Mm-hmm. He's like what Steve Young is.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like Lamar is a special runner.
Well, Lamar, Josh runs through people. I give Josh credit. He runs through.
Yeah,
people.
He should stop. Like he should. You're right. He does. You should stop, though.
Lamar runs like Ja'Marr Chase.
Right. Yeah, right. Right.
Crazy.
Yeah. To answer, I don't know what you could possibly say that would keep him from being that.
Well, there's Johnny Unitas.
Well, you know what it is? Like, people will, I think ultimately what will happen is people will hold on to their like undying desire to not be wrong. Because they were wrong about Lamar when he was drafted. They were wrong about Lamar when he took over for Joe Flacco. They were wrong about Lamar when he won an MVP. They were wrong about Lamar when he won a second MVP. They were wrong about Lamar when he almost won his third MVP. They're going to be wrong. If Lamar winds up winning a Super Bowl, they're just going to be wrong again.
I think Lamar is my NFL version of Russell Westbrook to you. I love Lamar.
Oh, it's understandable. Yeah, I love Lamar Jackson too. During Jersey Hunt, I saw it was a Ravens jersey. It wasn't Lamar. I did think for a second, Lamar Jackson jersey. And then I left the store. Didn't get anything. But
did you still love Lamar, KC, on what was it, Christmas Day 2 years ago when
Lamar, that is the one, and it sounds crazy because Patrick Mahomes has beaten the Niners twice. So not that I wouldn't be afraid of him. Lamar is the quarterback I do not want to play. I don't know how you stop that guy. And specifically the Niners, because they have never been able to stop him. So like when it was Chiefs Ravens a couple years ago in the AFC Championship game, I didn't want to face Patrick Mahomes. But I was like, I'd rather face him than Lamar. I don't want to play Lamar. It terrifies me.
An update on the cornhole finale that is happening here at the big party at Odyssey. Kyle lost.
Oh, no.
So that means we have lost the services of Joe Brazil. It was a Joe Brazil on a pole match, and Kyle's not allowed back in this room. Kyle was smart enough to not walk in. He just looked through the window and went, I lost. Yeah. Hey, give him one of these. Give him one of these. Like,
wait, there we go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough look for our man right there. Do you have a Super Bowl pick? We haven't given ours yet, Matt. Do you have a Super Bowl pick?
Oh, God. I haven't even thought about it. I'll go Bills. Why not? I'll go Bills.
Well, they have to play somebody, so we've got the Bills versus who?
Who cares?
Versus who cares. It was the irresistible force meets the immovable object. The Bills versus who cares.
Let's do... Picking the Eagles again is so boring. Let me think something different. I'll do Bills-Eagles. Why not? Just because I can't think of anything else that's on my head.
There's nothing wrong with that, by the way. It feels like people are going to zero in on those quarterbacks. They're going to zero in... they're going to zero in on Lamar, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, and then the juggernaut that is Philadelphia. Do you want to give your Super Bowl prediction?
Yeah, I think your math is correct, and it will continue because I got Ravens-Eagles. I got Ravens winning the Super Bowl.
I want to put the Lions in there, but I have this gut feeling, and a lot of people seem to have this feeling that just the Lions aren't going to be, like, last year was their shot.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know why we only think they have one shot. I mean, it's hard to just keep going back, and that's why I can't put the Chiefs back in. When I saw 6 of 7, I was like, are they just going to live there? Are they just going to live in that game in the middle of February? And the answer is, yeah, like, Andy Reid is still there. Patrick Mahomes, they may be there. But I do think someone's going to catch them this year.
I do, too.
And I desperately want it to be Baltimore. But I think it's going to be Buffalo.
Are the Packers the biggest threat to the Eagles in the NFC?
See what I'm saying?
And that's who I have them playing.
See what I'm saying? Both of you guys.
The Bills and the Packers are my Super Bowl pick.
You're not. It's not crazy, though. It's not.
The answer to your question, Matt, is I don't know if they are. I think the Rams are constructed really well if Matthew Stafford can play 17 games as some semblance, or close to 17 games, as some semblance of Matthew Stafford. I think that team is constructed really well. I think there are teams ascending. If J.J. McCarthy is good, if that's a 10-win wild card team, that team next year I'm looking at very closely to be a team that you put in the upper echelon of the NFC, assuming that, and I don't think that they are, but assuming that they aren't there this year. But I like the Packers before the Micah trade. I liked them. I love them now. And I'll you know, we could run it back and I'll be wrong, but I'm looking at the Packers right now. I'm looking at the Packers and Bills. I hope it's the Packers and Ravens. I wouldn't care if it's the Packers and Chiefs. I just feel like it's going to be one of those damn quarterbacks. Maybe James is right. Maybe it's Joe Burrow. Maybe this is the Bengals' big breakout moment. I just feel like in last week of January, you got a team that, you know, even if you're just average on defense, I don't know how you do that against either of those other three teams. We'll see.
You know who's the wild card and I think all of this is the Commanders. Because if they are at 80% of what we saw from them last year, and Jaden is who we think he is, now you got a
problem. Yep.
A real potential transcendent quarterback leading a good team. And that could flip everything on its head.
Could the Buccaneers make it out of the NFC, or are they just that's a nice story in the NFC South?
I think they're a good team. I don't think they're...
Your boy Cousin Sal got him in the Super Bowl.
I why is he my boy? I've never once listened to him. Who are you referring to?
Bill Simmons is his boy. Cousin Sal is your boy.
All right, man. Yeah. Matt George is my boy.
I can't even know. We've actually learned who Damian's boy is.
There is no one better than Jerry Jones. That's not. That's a misrepresentation of what happened. Very, very gross misrepresentation. That is an aspire level, aspiration level of misrepresentation.
I got 28 million DB to play two. That button.
Have you talked to your Locked On Clippers colleagues lately? What are those guys talking about right now?
My boy Dime, he's too busy fighting with Kevin Durant on Twitter to worry too much about what's going on. There is a, for some reason, if you want a rabbit hole to go down to be entertained, Kevin Durant and my boy Dime, who hosts Locked On Clippers, and Dime is great. He also does a vlog. He sits in the wall in the Intuit Dome. Like, he's awesome. Phenomenal content over there. But for some reason, he ticked off Kevin Durant one time on social media with a take about, like, KD not being amongst the greatest of all time or something. Just a take, and KD got wind of it, and they've been beefing for months since. So that's a good rabbit hole to go down. But I don't know, man. Dime bleeds Clippers blue and red. So I imagine he's going to immediately try and defend the franchise. And if I were a Clipper fan, I'd be looking at my draft stock and going, we literally cannot afford to lose 5+ first round draft picks, or we're not going to have a pick for 20 years. So yeah. Let's make sure this is not a real thing.
How do you think that plays out? Because I don't think the hammer comes down from Adam Silver. Like, I don't think that happens. There may be some discipline. But if you ask me for a prediction, I don't think anything ends up happening. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a domino effect. If this if they were to prove this true and come down super hard on it, I feel there would be a domino effect around the league that would be pretty catastrophic, isn't a good word, but pretty negative. Like just every team getting a little scared or buttoning things up, because I'm not naive enough to think that there's not some level of this on a minor scale that goes on around the NBA, just like the whole concept of tampering and you can't have conversations until free agency opens at midnight. Yeah, right. Like we know conversations are happening long before that. So I think it's part of the business of what makes the NBA work. So Kings and Vivek Ranadive get better at cheating, I guess. But I don't think anything's going to end up coming of it. I think there seems to be enough loopholes or enough like wiggle room for the Clippers to probably wiggle their way out of it. And I don't know if Adam Silver and the NBA wants to open that can of worms of if this is true and we acknowledge that it's true and punish it. Again, the domino effect that would come from that.
I agree. In other NBA news that literally no one cared about, Cam Thomas signed his qualifying offer today. I'm not sure why. Maybe it was a sign it or we'll revoke it and you'll have nothing. But Cam Thomas signed his qualifying offer. He was one of the three kind of bigger name restricted free agents we've talked about, Josh Giddey being the other one. And, of course, Jonathan Kuminga. Is this just it, Matt? Is this what's going to happen? All three guys wind up signing that qualifying offer and hope that business picks up next June?
July? I don't care about the other two, but I sure hope so with Kuminga. Like, just for the chaos of it. If that's there's definitely a risk factor for Kuminga, but, I mean, I guess there's a little bit of anti warrior bias on my shoulder, but the chaos of Kuminga doing that and the severe ramifications that that would have for the Warriors organization. Now, don't get me wrong, it could backfire and blow up in Kuminga's face too. There's a big risk element to that, but this is the scenario where Scott Perry months ago said that he could, he didn't say it, but I'm essentially in these negotiations, the reason why he's comfortable saying I'm not including this, or my first offer is Saric and Devin Carter, find something better, or Malik Monk and find something better, is because he can put his feet up and go, all right, go down this road and I'll watch him accept this qualifying offer, pick up this qualifying offer. And then you're scrambling to figure out what to do. And I'll just sit here with a smile on my face and a bowl of popcorn in my hands and watch everything blow up and then revisit a conversation with Kuminga next year in free agency if I have to. Right. So this is the Warrior. We've heard for months and talked for months. The Warriors hold the cards. The Warriors have the final say. But the one thing that they cannot control is what Jonathan Kuminga decides to do. And if Kuminga signs the qualifying offer, they lose every bit of control and leverage that they have. So the Kings are sitting there going, all right, you want to go down this route. We gave you a potential out. It's not the most exciting trade package for sure. Do you think it's a little bit insulting? Yeah, that first offer probably was kind of a little bit insulting, but at least it's something. You're getting very close to having nothing. So, hey, pressure's on.
I kind of feel like Joe Lacob would rather walk away with nothing than to take what he deems to be a less than deal. And I kind of feel like that's where this is headed. He's like, well, forget it. We'll just lose the asset and move on about their lives. It's hard for me to say one way or another whether that's right or wrong, because I mean, I'm being honest too. I know you're getting a draft pick or a conditional draft pick or something like that, but I don't know if Saric and Devin Carter is helping the Warriors on their quest to winning a championship this upcoming season. So part of me says, yeah, maybe just lose the asset. And if people go down and we ask them to go into the game, short of him refusing to go in, we got a good player that we can possibly put out there.
Mm-hmm. Malik Monk would sure help them, though. According to my NBA 2K26 simulation of the season, Malik Monk's going to be sixth man of the year too. So if I'm the Warriors, like, I would take another look at Malik Monk. I understand that if you're trading for Malik financially, you have to make a decision about Buddy Hield or Moody. And I would take Malik over both those guys personally. But again, I'm with you. I feel Lacob would be, and I think the reaction of how everything went down when yours truly floated out there that it was initially a Saric and Carter offer, I think the reaction from the Bay Area side of things is a strong indication that I don't think the Warriors want to be played in any kind of way. But Kuminga might play him. like the qualifying offer could be Kuminga's last true middle finger to this organization, and it could work.
They're playing themselves at a certain point.
Yeah.
They may have already done it. Like, you should have made the move in February. If this was really the road we were going down, you should have made the move months ago.
Agreed. And look, got to tip your hat to Scott Perry and some of those Bay Area reporters who should do the same thing. They won't, but they should. They thought it was laughable when he allegedly made that offer and had that discussion. And, oh, that's his market. That's not. No, Scott Perry knew exactly what the market was. Mm-hmm. Now, whether or not the Warriors wanted to accept that and take that deal, you can't make them do that. But the offer was, at best, Malik Monk. At best. Nobody else in the league was offering something like that. And he knew it before anybody when they thought he was crazy. He was right in that aspect.
To kind of pivot this away from the Kuminga conversation, though, does that give you confidence going forward in Perry's decision, for example, to pick up Keon Ellis's option? If he has shown at least to be a step ahead of things this offseason with how the market has ended up playing out, does that give you, or should it give Kings fans, any kind of confidence of, yeah, technically the Kings gave up some control for Keon in terms of allowing him to be a unrestricted free agent next season, if it even gets there. The Kings and Keon can negotiate an extension, I believe, in February. Do you feel a little bit better about that? Because I know Kings fans are worried about both the Keon Ellis extension and, to some extent, the Keegan Murray extension.
I guess as it pertains to Keon and Keegan, to a certain, I don't know what everybody's worried about.
Keon walking.
But you can still sign him to an extension. Like, just because you didn't do it at the very first opportunity you could, or just because you didn't, you know, do all of that, doesn't mean that you can't, in the end, sign him to a contract extension. There could have been financial reasons. And I won't say these are questions we didn't know. I'll say that these are questions I don't know the answer to. But there could have been conversations between Keon Ellis's people, Keon Ellis and Scott Perry. Here's what we're doing. I know it's not ideal. Here's why we're doing it. We have every intention of signing you to a contract extension. We see you as a part of this team for the long-term future, but we're trying to maintain the little bit of financial flexibility we can control. We're trying to maintain this offseason so we could potentially add to this basketball team. But that first day that we're allowed to negotiate a contract with you, we're absolutely going to do that. Again, I don't know that those conversations have been had, but if the Sacramento Kings want Keon Ellis as a part of their team moving forward, I imagine that they have. If they don't, it doesn't matter anyways. What we want is not relevant.
Right. I don't need to be told directly that those conversations have been had for me to believe that they've been had. That being said, I have been told to some semblance that, of course, conversations are ongoing. And that shouldn't be surprising to everybody, because one of the first things that jumped off the page with Scott Perry in his introductory press conferences is his transparency and the fact that he's having conversations with everybody in the organization, from the roster to the front office to the coaching staff, even beyond that. Like, he's met with everybody. So yes, communications are happening and will continue to happen between Keon and the Kings through every step of what the next 6 months brings, from Keon getting off to a great start and Keon going to Scott, and or his people going to Scott knocking on the door and saying, hey, buddy, the price just went up, to Keon getting off to a slow start and the Kings being transparent with Keon, you're still in our plans. Everything is fine going. We still believe in you. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and those conversations I'm sure are already happening on the the Keegan Murray side of things as well. So I don't think anybody should be concerned about this idea that Scott Perry called Keon and said, we're picking up your option, deal with it, click. And then they're not going to see each other or talk to each other until training camp. That's not happening.
Yeah. To answer your question too, Matt, there should be confidence in Scott Perry at the very least, in the fact that whatever decision is made with this roster, with this franchise, it's coming from a place of knowledge. It's coming from a place of understanding the market around the league. That doesn't mean it's always going to work out perfectly, but he's not going into any decision blind or not knowing or hoping. He's doing it with the knowledge of this is the market, this is the price that needs to be paid, whether that's for a free agent or in a trade. And yeah, there's a level of confidence in that. And that's we have our jokes with the other guys that were here before that. I'm not trying to take shots, but Scott Perry absolutely has an understanding between teams and agents of what should and should not be offered or even accepted if it's a trade or a free agent.
I think a major strength of Scott Perry's too, we talked about when the Kings hired him, is his experience around the league. But I think a strength of Scott is his relationships. And I mean that in the sense that even by establishing his relationships, that he can have the hard conversations or make the hard decisions at the extent or that may have a negative impact on those relationships. Like I know, talking about the past regime, for all of Monty McNair's strengths, one of his strengths was not building relationships with his players. Like I've been told that was Wes Wilcox's job. Wes was the guy that you saw coming down, and every once in a while we'd see Monty in the practice facility and he'd either be sitting on the side watching or he'd be having a conversation with Mike Brown or some of the coaching staff. Very rarely did we ever see Monty really talking with the players. And I can tell you, I've been told by players that they didn't really see him or he wasn't really around. And that's not who Scott Perry is going to be. Scott Perry is going to be the guy that's having conversations with all these guys, including tough conversations to where, hey, I like you, Keon, but if I need to make this decision that's better financially for this team short term at the risk of potentially irritating you or frustrating you, hey, I'm going to make that decision because ultimately that's what's best for basketball. Mm-hmm. And I believe that plus Doug Christie's ability to establish relationships on the coaching side. If Doug has a great relationship with Malik Monk, but it appears that Malik is not part of the long-term plan and Doug has to pull some minutes from Malik or put Malik back in that bench role because there's not a spot for him in the starting lineup. I believe that Doug will be able to do that because of the relationships that he established with players. So I think that's going to be a strength of this front office and coaching staff going forward, is the relationships that they build and the ability to establish those bonds that allow hard decisions and hard conversations to happen.
It's certainly frustrating to think so much that has gone wrong in Sacramento is the inability to have people skills.
Yeah.
Just that was complete lack of people skills.
That was the foundation of last season. I mean, last season was a junior high. This organization turned into junior high school. There was drama. There were disconnections. There was discontent that led to the complete collapse of what we knew the Beam team to be. So maybe Perry and Doug can put those pieces back together, reestablish. And that's honestly, what was the number one thing that Doug Christie did when he took over this team midseason last year and got them to play better. It was all relationship based. It was taking them up to the roof as a team to see the Beam and talking about what they mean to the city and the example that they are. He talked about, hey, I'm going to put my arms around these guys and love on them because he felt like that was lacking. Mm-hmm. Now I'm looking forward to seeing the more coach side of Doug Christie now. Like he can put his arm around guys, but is he able to grab a guy and pull him aside and go, you need to do your job? I'm looking forward to seeing that element now that Doug has the security of the job established. Mm-hmm. But relationships were fractured last year. And that's probably a foundation of what needs to be rebuilt and where the reset needs to happen.
your latest episode of Locked On Kings talks about the kind of the relationship between Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan on the floor and what the key to making it work might be, and it's the new point guard.
Yeah, so I had a Big Dave, who's one of our one of the former hosts of Locked On Bulls, now hosts the CHGO Bulls podcast. He's love that guy. If you ever need anybody to talk Bulls, bring Big Dave on the show. He's just a phenomenal guy, great basketball knowledge. I joked around at the end of that episode that I was depressed, because what he essentially laid out there is we knew that the best year of LaVine and DeRozan together in Chicago was when Lonzo was healthy, right? But what Dave lays out is that, like, Zach LaVine cannot be a number one guy or should not be a number one guy. DeMar DeRozan is going to do what DeMar DeRozan does. But at this point, DeMar DeRozan's career, you probably don't want him to be the number one guy. And we already have questions about DeMontis Sabonis and his willingness to be the number one guy simply because he doesn't want to look to score before he wants to look to pass and play, make and get his teammates involved. So you have these, it's a negative term, but people are calling the mid three here in Sacramento. You have these three guys that are all number two options on really good teams. But finding the number one out of those three is challenging. And what Dave laid out is, look, the key to making them successful, the key to having DeMar DeRozan get his while not completely ball stopping and taking away from everybody else, the key to Zach LaVine being the offensive, explosive player that he can be without the mistakes and without completely disappearing at times or going ice cold, is a solid point guard. And the Sacramento Kings have literally one of them in Dennis Schroeder. So I'm excited about Schroeder. I'm excited about the pace that Schroeder plays with. I'm excited about the attitude that Schroeder has. Like, he does his classic kind of ice in his veins pose, and he has this kind of chip on his shoulder type attitude that he plays with. He's absolutely killing it in Eurobasket right now for Germany, and I'm going to have a podcast on that coming up in a little bit, or maybe next week. But that's a lot to put on a point guard who has not been here before, who is stepping into this for the first time, who has also bounced around the league like a ping pong ball over the last 2-3 years. So there's going to be a lot of responsibility. The point guard position already has a tremendous amount of responsibility. There's going to be a lot on the shoulders of Dennis Schroeder to kind of be the glue to make this work. And I left that conversation understanding that and really nervous by that.
I don't want to steal too much of your thunder for the podcast, but I was about to ask you, how much stock do you put into the way he's been playing in Eurobasket? Because, you know, he's had some really good stat lines. He's, you know, been a floor general like he has been for Germany for the past 3-4 years or something like that. How much stock do you put into being able to translate that into being a floor general for the Sacramento Kings?
I think it's just dismissive to say it doesn't matter. Like, it absolutely does. And I think where I'm hoping the most, KC, is that, okay, now he'll hit the ground running, right? Like, I expect, okay, he's going to finish Eurobasket, and then in a couple weeks, he'll be starting training camp with the Sacramento Kings. Hit the ground running. Like, build that momentum. How would we be feeling if Dennis Schroeder was terrible right now in Eurobasket? We'd be freaking out. It's the same way, like, okay, Neek Clifford and Maxi Marino were playing really, really well in summer league. Oh, but it's just summer league. Who cares? It doesn't matter. It's not real NBA competition. Okay, but when Devin Carter had a bad summer league game, everyone's like, Devin Carter can't do this. He's washed. He's terrible. It's the same thing. So I think it absolutely does matter. I think it should be giving Kings fans confidence. We're getting a glimpse of what he can be as a leader of a team, because while Germany has a lot of talent, Franz Wagner, of course, like, Schroeder is a leader, a captain on that team. Mm-hmm. So I'm encouraged by it. I'm absolutely encouraged by it. And I'm hoping that we will see, whether it's in preseason or the start of the season, Dennis Schroeder not have to ease into things, but be able to hit the ground running. Because, again, the only point guard on this roster as of right now, the Kings will kind of need that from him. You brought in a veteran point guard. He needs to be ready to go right away. He can't ease into the season the same way Neek Clifford has to ease into the season, or maybe even Keegan Murray has to ease into the season. No, the Kings need Dennis Schroeder as their starting point guard to hit the ground running, and I hope Eurobasket will help with that.
Why would any player on this team think they can ease into the season? You guys stunk last year. You don't have the ability to ease into the season. You got to come out. I'm not saying you have to play your best ball on October, 23rd or whatever the day is, but you've got this training camp that you have coming up, this preseason you have coming up. That's 3 weeks from Monday. Y'all got to be on point.
And I think what I mean by ease into the season is not so much like mentally. Like, I don't think Keegan Murray is going into the season going, okay, I can take a few weeks to get comfortable. But I think after, like, every team has a ramp up period, right? We especially see these playoff teams have a ramp up period where they're typically not playing their best basketball in October, November, and even early December. Yeah. Then they really start to pick it up. That's what I mean. Like, in that time where Neek Clifford has to get acclimated, because I do believe Neek is going to be a part of the rotation. During that time where I would love for Keegan Murray to be awesome right out the gate, but maybe Keegan needs a week to just kind of get into game shape, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm hoping we don't have to think about that or talk about that from Dennis Schroeder, because that is one of the advantages of playing in Eurobasket during the summertime. A disadvantage, which you'll hear a lot of people talk about, is what if he gets hurt, or what if he's too tired because he's playing all these extra games? Well, there's no cold start to the season for Dennis Schroeder. He's very much warm. He's been playing basketball, so he can hopefully just go right in.
Matt, before you get out of here, do you want to pour one out for our boy Trey Lyles? Oh, man.
May he enjoy Spain and have a great time over there.
Solid King.
I really enjoyed covering Trey's time here in Sacramento. I think the last 2 years for Trey were extremely inconsistent, not just with his playing time, but with the poor guy's health. I mean, he had so much momentum coming out of the Beam Team 1 year. And he talked about how this is where he wants to be. And he said in his exit interviews, like, I don't want to be anywhere else. I want to re-sign to stay here in Sacramento. And I know he was close with a number of guys on that team. He starts that next season, and remember, gets injured in training camp, I believe, is out, and then is back and forth in and out of the lineup over that year. And then last year in training camp, he was hurt in training camp again. So just nagging injuries, I think, stopped him from building any sort of consistency, rhythm, or momentum with the team the same way he established Beam Team 1. And on paper, he was a great fit for what the Sacramento Kings were trying to do off the bench. So I think he's a good player. I'm excited to see. Hopefully he has success over there with Real Madrid in Spain. I do believe that Trey Lyles is a better player than some of the guys that are on this roster right now. Like, I'd take Trey Lyles over Dario Saric. I'd take Trey Lyles over Doug McDermott.
That's the tough thing about the market. Like, Trey Lyles is an NBA player.
Mm-hmm. I also don't think, like, I don't know if Trey wanted to still be here, though. I think Trey was ready to kind of move on. And
well, join the club, pal.
I know Trey was close with many of the guys who are no longer here. Let's put it that way. So I think he was ready. And Scott Perry talks about volunteers, not hostages. So I think that's probably why there was never a talk of them coming back.
Get ready to learn Spanish, buddy.
NBA is the coldest offseason in history.
It is, man.
Trey Lyles is absolutely an NBA player.
With Matt, he's better than some of the people on the team right now. I'd like to have
the Warriors are like, I'd trade for Trey Lyles. Like, too bad. Yeah. Too bad.
If Trey Lyles were healthy, would you still play him? And he was still on the team. Would you still play him as like your backup 4 or 5 right now over Isaac Jones? Or would you give?
Yeah.
I think Isaac Jones is going to get that shot.
Well, and maybe given the circumstances too, maybe they don't feel like that's that big of a deal. Trey, when he's like there, I think Trey does a lot of things well. Maybe they feel like Isaac Jones can do those same things. Or maybe it's just the situation of we just can't.
Yeah.
Maybe whether we're holding on to this Kuminga thing or not, like we just can't. So also having Trey Lyles here, it was a 39-win team. I'm not 40-win team. I'm not suggesting what was it, 39 or 40?
40.
I'm not suggesting that's Trey Lyles' fault at all. Right. I'm just saying, like, it's not like, oh man, crap. Well, there goes five wins. It's not.
Who's going to put Brook Lopez in a chokehold now? That's what I want to know. That's his most iconic Kings moment.
That's a great question.
Somebody had aspiration.
Dario Saric, we're looking at you, buddy.
Somebody had aspiration to go do it. He's a Clipper now.
Yeah. Z Levine Aspire LLC. It's football, baby. We've got Cowboys. We've got Eagles. We got kickoff. We've got coverage coming your way in less than 1 hour. We will be here to cover it all tomorrow and discuss the first full weekend of NFL action. We're so happy that the season begins tonight. We're so happy to cover it for you tomorrow, beginning at 10 a.m. with the Insiders on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Fabletics!